When you're acting as your doodle's teacher during training, do you know their learning style? Take our exclusive fun and free quiz to find out at thedoodlepro.com/learning and make training more fun and successful.
But you're reinforcing the bark.
That is a super common misconception that you're training them to bark by giving them treats when they're reactive.
They are not. They don't even know they're barking.
Yeah.
So you're not reinforcing anything. You cannot punish or reward an emotion. And when your dog is over threshold and going crazy, it's having emotion and a primal state of fight or flight, survival mode. You're just trying to get out of that moment, and getting the dog's nose to the ground will do it for you.
Doodle breed dogs are easy to love, but can be challenging to parent. I'm doodle expert Corinne Gearhart, also known as the Doodle Pro, and I'm here to help doodle parents have a more fulfilling and rewarding experience with their doodles. No one has professionally worked with as many different doodle breeds or has more experience with doodles than I have. And I love to share my expertise in a fun, compassionate, and non-judgmental way. From my years of work and education in the pet care and dog training industry, I have an incredible network of skilled training, grooming, and veterinary professionals to share their knowledge with you and give you the doodle-specific answers you're looking for. I hope you enjoy today's episode as I help you parent your doodle like a pro. I want to share how touched I am by your support of our podcast and for becoming loyal listeners already. I'm thrilled to get notes from people already getting results on their doodles jumping, barking, or grooming. Thanks to your support, we already reached number 11 on the U.S. Pet and Animals podcast chart out of over 3,000 other podcasts. And we also ranked highly in Canada, the Netherlands, and Belgium, all in the first week of our release. I want to give a shout out to one of our listeners who took a minute to share a review on Apple Podcasts. Here's what Still a Rough Draft had to say. I'd give it 5 paws if I could. Before working with Corinne, the Doodle Pro, I felt unsure and worried about my poodle puppy. I'd raised 3 kids, but I wasn't sure if I'd be a good dog mom. Since working with Corinne for the last 5 years, I now have someone I trust to answer all of my dog mom questions and feel so much more confident. She even helped me navigate that second puppy decision. Be sure to listen to that episode. I'm so happy others across the country can now benefit from Corinne's expertise. Thank you. And if you'd like a shout out, please take a minute to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your streaming service. And this will tell the streaming services to share our podcast and doodle loving message with more people. Now let's talk about barking, lunging, and fear on walks and what to do about it.
Hi, I'm here with Victoria Baker. She is a trainer that I've personally used with my Cavapoo Nestle, and I'm so excited for her to come here and share her knowledge with you today. We're going to be discussing, why is your dog barking on walks? Many professionals would call that leash reactivity, but if your dog is pulling at other things, barking on walks, lunging, snarling or snapping, those are all signs of leash reactivity that Victoria is going to go over talking with us today. Victoria is a certified dog behavior consultant with the IAABC, and she focuses on aggression and reactivity. She can do all the basics regular dog trainers would cover, but she really specializes in dog-to-dog aggression and dog-to-human aggression and reactivity. Victoria, my first question for you is just to define reactivity. Many people define that as my dog is barking on walks or walks are really unpleasant together. Can you define for us what professionals see as that?
So reactivity is a little bit more than that. The dog doesn't have to be going crazy at the end of the line. The dog could be hiding behind your legs, but that's still reactivity because your dog is reacting negatively to whatever the trigger is that's causing it, which could be another dog. It could be a human. It could be a random tree stump in the middle of the yard and your dog freaks out over that. But it doesn't have to always be the lunging, the snarling, and the growling to be called reactivity. We want to make the dog feel safe and comfortable on a walk and happy. And anything that's not that is basically leash reactivity.
So we have some dogs. When I used to own a dog walking company, that if it was trash can day, those were their like most fearful days to go on a walk.
Yeah. So dogs are bred genetically to react to novel stimuli. So 6 days a week, you don't have trash cans in the road. And then on day seven, all of a sudden you go out and there's this thing that has never been there before. Dogs should react to that kind of stuff because that's what keeps them alive. Reactivity is a normal behavior, but we also want the dogs to feel safe, comfortable, and not stressed when you're out on a walk.
So you already pointed out that it looks different, that it's not just barking at or lunging. Can you go through the different types and what those look like?
The different types of reactivity that you're going to get is you're going to have a dog that it's fear-based, and there's two types of reaction to fear, which is fight and flight. There's also freeze. I have seen that, but it's rare. And so it's all the same. It doesn't really matter if your dog is trying to run away or hide or melt into a wall and disappear, or if your dog's absolutely at the end of the line showing every single one of its teeth and wanting to kill the other dog. It all gets treated the same, and it's all founded in fear. And the functional reward when it's a fear-based reactivity is to actually move away from the trigger. And I know everybody at home is probably going, but my dog is trying to lunge towards the other dog and try to get to the thing. So he doesn't want to get away. If he was left up to his druthers, he would not be anywhere near the trigger that you are coming up to. He would have long ago headed the other direction, but he can't because he's on leash and you're forcing him to go the way you want to go.
So that would look like if somebody's walking this way with their dog. And you're walking this way with yours, the dog feels kind of trapped because they're on leash. They don't have the option.
That's correct.
To leave the area.
Yes.
And it looks like they're pulling towards them, but
really the functional reward of that type of behavior is to move away. Your best defense is a good offense.
So effectively it works, them lunging and barking, because that dog doesn't get closer.
Well, right? Usually the handler or the other dog will say, oh, I don't want to get anywhere near that dog, and they move away. So they actually get reinforced for all that crazy behavior. Doesn't matter that you might be popping the leash, screaming at them, saying no or whatever. Their end goal is to move away from the trigger. And lo and behold, when they make a big show of it, they do move away from the trigger. Yeah. The fear-based behavior is the ears are pinned back. The tail is low or tucked. Their body posture is low and back. And they're usually sniffing. Their nose is usually on the ground and you can't get it up. Those are the type of dog. Once they go over threshold, then you'll see the fight. Then you'll see the lunging and the barking, the growling and the teeth and all of that stuff too. So that you shouldn't ever see. And if you do see it, it's your fault because you're taking your dog past the point of where he's able to exist.
And when you say over threshold, that's
yeah, every dog has a threshold. And it'll change, and you have to be a little bit intuitive on where that threshold is. So if you have a dog that's walking on leash across the street, paying attention to its handler, the threshold for your dog that has reactivity will be much smaller than if that dog was pulling and lunging to get to your dog across the street. Now the dog's threshold goes from 30 feet to 300 feet.
Yeah.
So we define the threshold as where your dog feels safe. Once you go past the point of where your dog feels safe, we call that going over threshold. And now you start seeing all kinds of the reactivity behaviors. And so the fear-based body language that you're going to see, like I said, is the ears back, tail tucked, and their body is low and to the ground. And usually their nose is on the ground. Sometimes you'll also have a dog that's trying to hide, or you'll have a dog that's trying to go behind. And what ends up happening is they circle around you because they can't get away from the leash. Your other type of reactivity is the frustrated greeter. It usually starts out where the dog is fearful of other dogs as a puppy. And then this puppy, Goldens particularly, Golden Doodles.
Yes, Golden Doodles for us.
Like they're just full of love for everything. People, dogs, just I love everything. And they're excited and they want to go and greet that thing. So the functional reward for that type of behavior is to move closer to the trigger, not away. And all of the barking and the lunging that you might see developed when the dog was still a little fearful. But then it didn't get any feedback on what they're supposed to do when they see other dogs along the way. And then they become these incredible frustrated greeters that just, I have to meet now. And they go crazy. And so the body language that you're going to see is jumping, yipping, screaming, and definitely the circling, because they're trying to get away. But it can quickly transfer into aggression, but not necessarily for the trigger. They might take it out on the trigger if they get away from you, but it's the frustration at the leash. And so they get angry that they're being restrained.
Mm-hmm.
And so frustrated greeters are really hard to determine because it can look like aggression.
And when it looks like aggression in that way, how does that redirect sometimes, or what does that look like when it's starting out as the frustrated?
So it'll start out as a lot of barking and jumping, and then they'll try to get away. And then after usually about 30 seconds, you know, a dog's level of arousal goes from 2 to 10 fairly quickly. Once they're at a really high state of arousal, they're going to redirect onto whatever's holding them back. So they'll start biting the leash, mm-hmm. or they'll start biting the owners. You know, frustrated greeters, a lot of the times I get calls and say, oh, they keep biting me in the calf and it's killing me. They actually are very friendly dogs,
yes.
but they just don't know how to control their frustration. And we don't want to get them frustrated in the first place. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the whole problem.
If you're on walks, that can look like somebody saying, he just really wants to say hi. He loves dogs. He'll calm down once he can say hi. Or once he sniffs you, he'll be okay.
And that probably is true for that particular dog. Mm-hmm. But the other dog, the other person's dog, can't handle what that dog's got to give right now, because that dog is at a level 10 arousal when they go to meet the other dog. And so it usually goes downhill no matter what.
Yeah.
Just as a standard rule, unless you know the dog and are friends with the dog, I do not agree with on-leash greetings ever. So the functional reward for the frustrated greeter is to move closer.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, fear-based behavior is much easier to treat than frustrated, happy, I'm crazy happy behavior. It's hard to snuff out happiness, and you don't want to snuff it out. You want them to be happy. So the other type of behavior that I find a lot is a conditioned behavior where the owner inadvertently reinforces the reactivity that the dog is exhibiting, especially with the small dogs. Some novel thing comes into the environment and the dog starts barking. And the owner gives undivided attention to the dog that's barking. And so the dog's like, yeah, I know. I knew that thing was wrong. That's why I barked. And so any type of attention to behavior that you don't like is reinforcement. Even if you're saying no, even if you're angry, even if you're upset, it's still reinforcing the dog that I should bark. And so after a bunch of repetitions of that, it becomes a conditioned behavior, just like telling your dog to sit means put your fanny on the ground. Seeing a dog in the distance means mm-hmm. bark.
When you're worried about a bigger dog, especially with a little one, there's an instinct.
Once your dog exhibits reactivity on leash, there's always that instinct
yeah.
to pull up. So causes for reactivity is one. The major reason is lack of proper socialization. So there's a difference between socialization and proper socialization. So we get a little puppy and everybody thinks, and everybody's been told too, by the way, get them out there, take them everywhere, introduce them to 100 people a day, you know, expose them to every type of dog you can think of, every breed, big, small, puppy, and let them go say hi. And that's the worst thing you could possibly do. Proper socialization is a matter of pairing something positive that the dog likes with something new and novel in the environment, and actually teaching your dog to ignore those things in the environment, not go up and say hi. That's the way you create a frustrated greeter.
And so that would look like handing strangers biscuits
yep.
and say, go take the treat from the man in the hat. That would be having that effect.
Yes.
Okay.
They yeah. go out and they force their puppies to go say hi to everybody because they think they've been told too. I'm not criticizing anybody mm-hmm. to have your dog meet all kinds of different people and all kinds of different dogs. And I agree, they do have to interact with those dogs, but it should be in the proper setting. It, mm-hmm. it's not just every dog you walk by, every person you walk by on leash in the neighborhood, at a farmer's market, whatever. Your goal is to calmly see them and then ignore them. That's what proper socialization really is. And we mess that up as soon as we get them home.
Or under socializing completely, I imagine.
Yes. And then there's the dog who's never been outside the backyard, mm-hmm. and they're going to be reactive to anything no matter what you do because they're scared. So the other cause is accidentally conditioning your pup to be reactive, which we already went through. So I'm not going to go through that again. Also, a third reason is not providing basic genetic needs that the dog requires in order to function as a normal animal. So what that includes is dogs like to sniff and forage and hunt and not be restrained. Mm-hmm. And you need to provide that for your dog somehow, some way.
So there's a common motto that trainers use of let them sniff. If you feel like I want a really well-behaved dog, you might have the impression that the dog always needs to be in a heel at your side. And that would be being a good dog. But that's not allowing them.
Absolutely not.
Right.
That's absolute torture for your dog. You go out on a mile walk, 5 blocks around the neighborhood, and walk on your left side a foot away from you the entire walk. Total torture.
And not only is it asking so much of them, you're depriving them of the enrichment that they could be getting.
You're frustrating that dog unbelievably, yes.
And teaching a heel isn't bad.
No, a dog absolutely knows how to heel and should know how to heel, mm-hmm. should know how to walk through a crowd, should know how to walk through a group of dogs. Whatever it is, the dog should be able to heel. But those times that you ask your dog to heel, it's for max 5 minutes.
Yes. And so modifying your expectation of what that should look like and what you're expecting of your dog.
Yes.
Makes a big difference.
Absolutely. Having your dog always on leash creates reactivity because they never get to be a dog. They have to release that energy somehow, some way.
Okay, so you were explaining that by your dog always needing to be on leash, that you don't recommend that, and you equate it to zoo animals?
Like the lions at the Wildlife Animal Sanctuary, which is a 40-acre track that they hold the lions in. I think it might be even 80 acres. But still, all they do is run the fence up and down all day. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the definition of insanity. So by never letting your dog be a dog, which means letting them forage and hunt off leash, then you're driving your dog insane.
So if you live in a single family home and have a backyard, I'd imagine that you'd equate that backyard with the fence to that lion in the enclosure.
Correct.
As to how much enrichment they're getting.
Correct.
And how much of a
yard is better than nothing.
Yes.
But it's still a prison.
Yes. And then, so if I live in an apartment, every potty break, et cetera, is always on lead.
Correct.
And so you're encouraging to give chances for
off-leash mm-hmm. interaction.
And if your dog doesn't have a solid recall yet, I'd imagine you would encourage a long lead to start.
Mm-hmm. Teaching recall in a puppy, which is a different subject,
yes.
all on its own, very easy. Puppies want to be around you. Your puppy's not going to run away. It's the exception. There's always exceptions mm-hmm. to everything, but they're not going to run away. So letting your puppy drag a light long line and going around and having fun and letting them forage in a field.
A member who has a brand new puppy, she wants to make sure that she doesn't teach her dog to be reactive on leash. Mm-hmm. So if she's trying to prevent leash reactivity, what would be your top tips?
So what we end up doing is we wait until there's a problem to do anything with the dog. So mm-hmm. we need to get into a different mindset with that. You need to get in the habit of rewarding all of the behaviors that you like, that you see that the dog already offers, and ignore and manage the behaviors that you don't want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And food is the easiest medium to do that. You can use different things, but when they're young puppies, like, you can't use the environment for young puppies because it's too stimulating. And food is the quintessential primary reinforcer for all mammals. You die without food. So it's just always being prepared.
And I love hearing you talk about how much you need to reinforce with treats that we usually underestimate.
Absolutely. People are too chintzy.
So way too chintzy.
Let's say we're playing the look at that game and we're trying to change the emotion of the dog who has leash reactivity to other dogs. When I say look at the dog and then you tell the dog that looking is great and then you give him a treat. When you tell the dog that what he did is good, it's called a marker. It basically is this fast. A dog comes into the picture. It's look, mark, treat, look, mark, treat, look, mark, treat, look, mark, treat, look, mark, treat. Dog goes out of the picture, no more food. It's that fast.
And my guess
I'm not exaggerating.
That that's way more treats than you thought.
Yeah, so the dog is in visual threshold for 15 seconds. You're going to give that dog 5 treats every 3 seconds.
If someone wants to know, well, how long am I going to have to do that?
The dog will tell you.
Do you want your doodle to listen the first time? When we're asking difficult things of our doodles, we need to pay them accordingly. We've had hundreds of doodles taste test different treats, and we've got a great list of their favorites. Go to thedoodlepro.com/treat freebie for our free list of doodles' favorite treats so you can get your doodle to listen the first time.
Sit and stay right there. We'll be back right after this quick break.
Dogs' body language is a foreign language to us humans. Are you wondering how fluent you are? Take our free quiz at thedoodlepro.com/body and find out how fluent you are in reading dogs' body language.
We've already gone through the types.
Yes.
So we're going to skip through that. And we've already gone through what it looks like when you see those types. So we're going to go right into
what do we
different
do?
Types of protocols
yeah.
to treat it. So we have counter conditioning and desensitization, which mostly is done through the look at that game, which people call LAT, L-A-T. And that is really simple. Let's just say they're reactive towards dogs. Every time they look at a dog, you tell the dog looking is great, and then you follow up with a treat. So you're pairing something that the dog loves, a treat, with something that normally the dog has feared. And you're also making sure that the dog connects the dots that that dog is getting him the reward, mm-hmm. not him and not you, the dog. So that's kind of the definition of counter conditioning and desensitization. Then you have the second one is behavioral adjustment training is what they call it. And that's called BAT. And that's where we get into letting the dog feel as though it has choices and amenity, what the dog is doing. So I like to put the dog on a long line and give him the option to tell me through body language what he's feeling. And then I honor the dog's choices, especially when he makes good choices. Instead of lunging towards another dog, he makes the choice to walk away. Mm-hmm. And when we have a dog on a short leash, like a 4 or 6 foot line, we are unable to give the dog enough freedom to make those choices. And so that's another reason why letting the dog sniff out on walks, your dog actually makes really good choices mm-hmm. on a walk. You just don't notice.
And so just by adding considerable length to that leash,
yes.
can remove the frustration that 4 to 6 foot leash
Correct.
Would add.
And 8 foot shortest, 10 to 15 is even better. And I get it. Everybody at home is going, I can't walk a dog on an 8 to 10 foot leash on my sidewalk. He'll get run over in traffic. There is some skill involved on your part in handling the leash.
And seeking out areas that are away from the road.
Correct.
And that could be part of your planned venture together. Retractable leashes that can add that length. Those usually aren't advised by trainers. Are you on the same page?
No, they should okay. be banned. They're the worst things that have ever been invented. So a retractable leash is designed to always have tension mm-hmm. on the line. And when you put tension on the line, no matter where it is located on the body, you're going to increase arousal no matter what. So if I put tension on you and pulled on you, your arousal would go up. Mm-hmm. So basically it increases the state of mind of the dog, whatever state he's in. So if he's starting to be fearful, you're going to increase that fearfulness. If he's mm-hmm. starting to become aggressive, you're going to increase that mm-hmm. aggressiveness. And if you want a dog to walk on a loose leash, there's no way you can do it on a flexi lead.
They can never back up enough to stop the tension.
There's
they
no
can
sweet never, spot. They're designed to always be tight so they don't get tangled up. I get why people use them. They're wonderful, but they don't get tied up in the feet.
Right.
And you don't have to deal with yourself being a good leash handler.
Yes.
And if your dog is perfectly well trained and your dog doesn't pull on a leash and is perfectly happy out on walks, flexi leads aren't the worst thing in the world. They're not to work with reactivity and they're not to work with puppies.
My least favorite part about flexi leads, in order for the leash to wind up, it needs to have that big clunky plastic handle. And if that gets dropped,
it scares the crap out of
them. It's so scary. And they run away from it because it's clanking and chasing them as it gets closer and closer and is winding up. So you have a runaway dog who's really freaked out. And that's really, my least really favorite. Yes.
And we'll never stop.
Yes. So it's the best way to lose your dog.
On something.
Yes.
But then you'll have people at home say, well, I'll use it, but I'll just lock it in place. Those mechanisms are not strong enough to withhold that much poundage of pressure. I mean, sure, for a little dog, probably no problem. But for a dog 50 pounds, 40 pounds and up, those mechanisms aren't going to hold. And trust me, your timing on that mechanism, if it's out and loose, and then all of a sudden an off-leash dog comes up, or a person, a kid on a scooter, all of a sudden comes up and your dog might lunge at the kid on the scooter, the dog's 10 feet away and you lock it into position, you have no control over your dog. Yes. It's basically having a dog off leash, which is great, but
without all the benefits of it. Yes. Right. Yes.
And then the third protocol, and it's actually not a separate protocol because you have to go through this with any protocol that you use, is training your dog alternative behaviors. So actually teaching your dog how to walk on a leash. So that way the leash isn't tight and doesn't add to the arousal of the situation. So you're working against yourself. And then other things like relaxing and being calm on a mat while you have long exposures to mild triggers is how you desensitize how the dog feels about those triggers. You can actually teach some distracting behaviors where you teach the dog to touch your hand so that you can reset the dog.
And in creating distance, a lot of people feel like they are locked into the sidewalk and they are locked on the path and the momentum that they're going. So if they're going straight on a sidewalk and another dog is coming, they feel like, well, I have to stay on this. You can use people's driveways. You can go up on lawns. Like, that is okay.
I encourage trespass.
I mean, you are your dog's advocate. And if your doodle is feeling fear and they are trapped with you on this leash and can't get away, you can help create that distance.
But there are emergency behaviors that you should train your dog just for those situations, just to get through the moment. Mm-hmm. But getting through the moment isn't training. Mm-hmm. So you're not helping your dog getting over its problem of leash reactivity. All you're doing is deferring it to the future. Mm-hmm. So, and you have to respect your dog's threshold. And if you don't, then you'll never change the dog's behavior because the dog can't trust you to keep him safe. And that is a big part of it, is the human puts the dogs in these situations and the dog knows that it wouldn't be in that situation unless the human put it there. So we're going to go through some of the things that I do to work with leash reactivity.
Okay.
And the big one is equipment. So I do like the longer leash so that you can let your dog forage and let your dog sniff. Mm-hmm. And it actually decompresses the dog and removes stress. And what you're doing is trying to keep the dog at an even arousal, right? Because when your dog's at a level one, level two arousal, your dog is perfect. I'm actually pretty particular about the type. Do I?
Yeah.
I plug a tie? I mean, they're not paying me.
No. Nope.
It's the PetSafe SureFit harness. It's the cheapest harness you can probably buy, but you can't buy it in a store. You have to buy it online. The reason I like it is because it has a very low profile. There's not a lot of material on it. Mm-hmm. It's a Y harness. So it comes like this necklace around the neck in a Y and it sits right on their sternum. Mm-hmm. And it has 5 points of adjustment. So I can get it to fit nice, snug, and tight on the dog, which is important because when you're teaching the dog what a leash means, which nobody ever does when they get their puppies, by the way. They just slap them on and just drag the...
And expect that they know how to walk on a leash.
Well, actually, I don't even think they expect the dog to know how... They just drag it.
Yeah. So a lot of little puppies will come home at 8 weeks.
Yeah, because, you know, it only weighs 10 pounds.
And people will expect, like, oh, we're going to go on a family walk. We got a dog.
Right.
And
the dog...
Has no idea.
10-week-old puppy doesn't want to go for a walk. Yes. Trust me. So a front clip harness. This particular harness actually isn't meant to be clipped on the front. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a cheap harness, but I clip it to the O-ring on the front. It also has a clip on the back. So just to go over harnesses that clip on the back, because everybody buys harnesses that clip on the back, and they're great. They are very comfortable for the dog, but they are designed to make pulling feel good. So you're working against yourself if you clip it on the back, because as soon as he starts pulling, he's like, yeah, this feels good. And he pulls even harder. It provides resistance. Mm-hmm. And you want to feel that resistance when you're pulling something.
So if you had a sled dog and you wanted to encourage them to pull, you wouldn't clip on the front.
No.
It would be a back clip with harness.
Apply resistance on the back, and then mm-hmm. they pull against that resistance. Like if you were snowboarding, it's actually easier to ski and snowboard on a hill, because when you go to turn, there's more resistance in your turn. Mm-hmm. And you don't just lose your balance and fall over.
So I really like the one that you recommended. I'll include that in the show notes, a link so people can find it.
Okay.
For some dogs, it has a small area to fit their head through. For some dogs that need a little bit more space as you're conditioning them to feel comfortable with the harness. Do you have a second favorite?
Well, 3-in-1, you can clip it around the neck so mm-hmm. that they don't have to put the head through the neck. The only problem with that is because there's a clip, there's less adjustment in the neck. So it tends to be too big for a very narrow necked dog. The perfect fit harness is a great harness. It has 3 components to it, and you can size each component differently to perfectly fit your dog, and it's really soft and doesn't bind. Mm-hmm. It's just really expensive. $60.
Yeah.
The martingale will engage a second's gone by, then it'll have to go over to the side. Another second has gone by, and now you're 3 seconds into, you have to react with your dog on leash, and timing is everything mm-hmm. when it comes to dog training. So the latency in those types of harnesses make it even harder.
Yeah.
Plus, it's hard to fit. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it fits really well and it works okay.
I like it better than a clip on the back or straight to the collar. So it's the better to me of those options, but it's my least favorite of the front clip.
I like the Freedom better. Balance harness is kind of like the PetSafe SureFit. It's long in the body. Mm-hmm. And I find that to be a problematic on a lot of dogs.
So a lot of these might be order a couple of sizes from Amazon. The one that you recommended first, which I'll include in the show notes, again, not sponsored, but the nice thing, as you mentioned, about all the areas of adjustment is you can make it fit really nicely.
Yeah, and it's a cheap harness. It's just a tool to help me get over the hump and training the dog how to walk on a loose leash and the leash reactivity. Mm-hmm. Once the dog knows how to do that, you can buy whatever harness you want, clip yeah. it on the back.
Excellent.
Okay, back to the collar. Mm-hmm. If I have a dog that has any type of reactivity, I do not use a collar. There's a couple of reasons why. The thyroid glands are right here. And if you have constant beating up of the thyroid glands, you're going to end up with a dog with thyroid problems. Maybe it might not show up until they're 10 or 12 years old, but they're still going to have a low thyroid because mm-hmm. there's damage being caused. But as soon as you put pressure on the neck and start choking a dog, their arousal goes way up mm-hmm. and you're working against yourself and you really don't have control over your dog, because I know that you feel bad that you're choking your dog. And once you start feeling bad about choking your dog, your handling skills go way down. Mm-hmm. The other reason why you like to use a front clip harness is because you're controlling the center of gravity on the dog. Mm-hmm. And so the dog doesn't have that power in order to try and pull you off your feet. To get mm-hmm. the dog, you're going to pull them off to the side and knock them off balance. And so they kind of have to readjust or they're going to fall. The dog doesn't particularly like it because it can't go where it wants to go, but you're not increasing arousal and you're not causing any pain. You are causing pain on a collar mm-hmm. and you're not causing pain when it's on the back. That's why they pull so hard, because it feels so good.
Right. So as we're talking about equipment, sometimes see doodles where, especially if they're larger and the owner is worried about maintaining control, if they're reactive on a walk, some people call them like the Lego collars. They look flat and plastic on the outside. They're usually black.
Oh, the corrector.
Mm-hmm, the corrector or a prong.
That's worse than a prong. The corrector actually pinches, and that hurts worse than the prong.
And it looks like more humane than the prong. And so what impact if a dog is fearful, reactive, or frustrated, greedy?
So when you start adding aversion, so any of those equipment, And the prong collar, you know, it hurts. I mean, that's how it's designed to work, is that it makes the dog so uncomfortable that it stops pulling. That's aversion, to make your dog do what you want it to do. And the collar, same thing. I mean, the slip collar, choke collar, slip leads, choke collar, prong collar, and collar all choke the dog. To which level of pain depends on the equipment, but you're associating something negative with what they're already having a problem with. If every time they see a dog, they get popped with the prong collar and feel pain, they're going to eventually hate seeing dogs.
So when you talked about the counter conditioning of when they look at the dog, they receive a treat, and they're equating that dog as giving them a treat, or is the source of the treat when you're playing.
I see a dog, I get fed. So I'm going to start to salivate when I see a dog. Yes. If you have a dog salivating, they're not lunging and pulling.
Right. So the same mechanism happens of, I see the dog and I have a pop and I feel pain. And so you're doing the same method with different results.
Well, you're associating something negative. Mm-hmm. So I hate seeing the other dog, because every time I see the other dog, my life gets exponentially worse. Mm-hmm. So let's just not see dogs.
Yeah.
So you create a dog who doesn't like other dogs by associating something negative, but it is very positively reinforcement. Punishment works. I mean, you know, there's four quadrants in learning theory. We're not going to talk about that. But punishment works, and that's why it's still around. I mean, we punish our kids, right? It works. But punishment reduces behavior. And so whenever something that you apply to the dog that reduces behavior, it's always punishment. Whether the human considers it punishment is irrelevant. If the dog doesn't like it and the dog stops doing something because you're applying punishment, you're applying punishment. And there's either reinforcement or there's punishment. It's not really neutral in these kinds of situations. So,
and our intent doesn't actually matter.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean when we inadvertently train our dogs to be reactive. Mm-hmm. This is part of it. Mm-hmm. We're always applying some sort of consequence when they see a trigger.
Right.
And you can either make it reinforcement and reinforce what you want to see, or you can try and snuff out and punish what you don't want to see. Mm-hmm. And dogs don't learn by teaching them what not to do, just like humans have trouble learning when you only teach them what not to do. Mm-hmm. It's really not our goal anyway when it comes to leash reactivity. When it comes to leash reactivity, you just want them to be happy when they see another dog. Because if they're happy, you can ask for all kinds of behavior out of the dog. We are trying to change the emotion. We're not trying to punish the symptom. So all the behaviors that you see out of a dog when you have reactivity is the behavior. But what causes the behavior is the emotion underneath, the feeling underneath. So whenever you have a behavior, there's always a need underneath that's not being addressed for the dog. And you have to address that need, or you're not actually going to change fundamentally how the dog feels when it sees another dog or a person.
Mm-hmm. So even if the pain is effective in suppressing the behavior.
And it does. You will absolutely teach a dog not to bark and lunge when it sees another dog. That does not mean emotionally underneath that that dog feels really good about having that dog in its presence. Mm-hmm. And then that creates, you punish the bark, the growl, the lunge out of the dog, which are warning signals to you that the dog doesn't feel safe and that it's not going to go well if the dog gets any closer. Then if you punish out those warning signals, then you just have a ticking time bomb.
And you took away the tick. Like, you don't have any warning.
Yeah, you don't have any warning coming. And they bite out of nowhere. No dog bites out of nowhere. They may have been punished
for giving you that tick.
For giving you those warning signals. Yes. But the signs are always there. Getting the dog's needs, genetic needs met. So having the ability to go out and have a decompression session of sniffing and foraging and being a dog will help tremendously. You're resetting the cortisol stress levels in the dog when you do that. Walking on a longer line, so it allows him to do some foraging and sniffing on the walk as well, and keeping them below threshold and acknowledging that your dog makes good choices on a walk that you've never even noticed before because you're always walking them on a 4 or 6 foot leash. Desensitizing the leash and the leash pressure, because anytime somebody feels restraint, your arousal goes up. And so you want to actually teach your dog to feel that restraint, but it actually means something. instead of it's just restraining me and I have to fight against it. You want to teach your dog to move into the restraint and come to you when it feels that pressure instead of doing what comes naturally, which is moving away. So you want to spend some time desensitizing the leash and teaching him what that leash pressure means, as opposed to right now, it doesn't mean anything to the dog. And then counter conditioning and desensitizing. So that's where the looking at the dog and associating something positive when you see the trigger for the dog, that takes repetition. And that's a process. So you can start at, 100 feet and move into 30 feet, that kind of thing. You have to start where the dog is at. Once the dog loses its mind on a walk, you're not going to train anything. No training happens when the dog is over threshold. The only thing you can do in that moment is to get out of it and then smack yourself across the face with the newspaper and say, how can I do that better next time? It's not the dog's fault. It's your fault. And then also you want to teach your dog how to walk on a leash so that you can be instructive.
So one of the common ones that some people who hire a positive reinforcement trainer might hear is when they're asking for what they want their dog to do when they're reactive. So they'll try to distract their dog by having a look at me, give them a sit.
The requirement for the dog is to look at you. So you're going to withhold the reinforcement until the dog performs the behavior. It's an operant behavior. When we're dealing with leash activity, we're actually using classical conditioning, not operant conditioning. So we are doing Pavlov. I associate food with dog, if that's the trigger. And then I salivate. Whereas operant condition is you have an antecedent, a behavior, and then a consequence. Mm-hmm. So the antecedent is I see the dog. The behavior is I look in at mom. And then the consequence is I get a treat. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about reactivity, they can't sit. They can't come. They can't look at you. And so asking the dog to provide a behavior in that instant when they're starting to feel threatened, you're never going to beat out the survival mechanism in the dog. So waiting for the dog to look at you is futile. It also doesn't associate the food with the dog. It associates the food with you. Mm-hmm. He already loves you. You don't need to do that. And a lot of trainers do it this way, right? They make the dog look away and then they get the food. And the dogs, sometimes it works, but most of the time it doesn't. I really want that dog to connect the dots so that when it sees the dog is what's getting him the food. Mm-hmm. And that's where we mess up, is food predicts dog instead of dog predicting food.
And it makes sense why somebody would try that, because it's an incompatible behavior. Sitting is instead of lunging.
It's a great behavior to train a dog, and it's a way to get through a moment. If you can have your dog stare at you while you have 10 dogs quickly walk by, great. He's not going to lose his mind, and he's not going to have his cortisol levels go up, but that's not the training.
And it's not changing the underlying fear or feeling threatened.
No,
or the
emotion.
No, all
you're doing is distracting, and distracting doesn't teach him to deal with his emotions when he sees the trigger.
Yeah. If somebody gives me my favorite New York City slice of pizza and I'm afraid of spiders, I might go around that spider to get that pizza.
That's a good point. 95% of leash reactivity is fear-based. Mm-hmm. Those other two items are a lot less. So we're talking a lot about fear and creating distance. When dogs are threatened, the threat is going to kill them. Like, there's no gray area. They're going to die. That's what they think. And no matter what we think and how we feel about that trigger, does not matter to the dog. The dog sees it. If the dog doesn't like it, it's going to kill him. So if you imagine all of these triggers going by as knife-wielding Jason serial killers, would looking away from the serial killer make you feel safe?
And if I did, I don't feel any better about the knife wielding.
No, it just creates more stress.
Yes.
And it makes you hate the handler even more.
Yeah. It's like, but if I can change that knife.
Do it.
Yes. And that's what they look like.
Yeah.
When they're in that sit they and do. Looking. Yeah.
And a lot of times, with some dogs, doodles especially, food is very important. And they'll do anything for the food. They'll look away from a serial killer to get food. But it's really not training. It's not helping the leash reactivity. Mm-hmm. It is a way to get through a moment in emergencies. There are emergencies. You cannot predict an environment that you can't control 100% of the time. So there are behaviors and emergency things that you want to do with your dog. And that's part of the solution is training those things so that you can get yourself out of a moment that you know your dog can't handle. But you're not trying to put the dog in those situations day after day after day.
And I want to acknowledge the social pressure that owners feel when they're on a walk and their dog does become reactive. We feel like I need to look a good neighbor, a good dog owner, and I need to show that I'm bothered by this.
Yeah, a lot of people feel like they need to punish their dogs in that situation, because if you're not telling your dog no, you're not doing anything to help your dog.
It can look permissive.
You know what? I'm going to do what's best for my dog. And when you're out walking a leash reactive dog, you need to pay attention to your dog and not talk to your neighbor.
So your priority, we're giving you permission to advocate for your dog by creating space and giving them your attention. And you don't have to feel obligated to yell, yank, etc.
If you really feel bad about it, you can go knock on their door and say, sorry, but I was training my dog. I didn't mean to be rude. You just need to deal with your dog and you can deal with the neighbor later. That's why we're human.
Right. And it's okay to say we're in training. If somebody says, my dog just wants to say hi, you can create that bubble. COVID was really nice for that.
Yeah, everybody crossed the street automatically. Yes. It was a great time for reactive dogs.
Yeah, it was. And so you can advocate for your dog, and it can feel uncomfortable if somebody's pushy. But so some people say things like they haven't had their shots or something. It doesn't matter if the other dog is friendly. We all have different interpretations of what that means. And no matter what, your dog feels restrained on a leash.
No, I mean, by keeping dogs on leash all the time, and you have dogs coming at each other and they don't know how to walk on a leash. So each one of them are pulling, maybe not like tremendously, but pulling enough, and they're staring at the other dog coming. Any dog that's staring at another dog is threatening that dog. And we force our dogs to threaten other dogs. And most of the time, your dog is not capable of backing up that threat. And that's why we teach reactivity inadvertently.
Thank you, Victoria. So I really appreciate Victoria coming on. We're going to stay after and talk to the Doodle Pro Society members and answer their questions exclusively. But I really appreciate you spending your time with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Doodle Pro Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. And I invite you to follow me on Instagram at TheDoodlePro for behind-the-scenes peeks at all of the adorable doodles I work with daily.